back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively back from the Super Bowl, where I wore out my mask in the early part of the week and then kept my distance from other guests. I only shook hands with one person, Warren Moon, and I didn't even mean to. Don Mueller is here. It's been a little while since we have reconvened for the recon. So reconvene, reconnaissance, whatever this is. But dude, I'm back on the beat. I'm working hard. We're putting great guests together. Donna Edwards is going to be a great guest this week. I know we've got Luke Broadwater from the New York Times as well, talking insurrection. We got all sorts of great guests, but I'm missing crab cakes, dude, and I'm missing the humanity. And I would tell you this, being in LA last week, I was around people I liked out on the street without a mask, you know, inside the facility with a mask, or we pulled masks down because it was properly spaced on Radio Row. We weren't elbows and asses. And it was a lovely week. I thank you as my mentor, my friend, my former guidance counselor for talking me into it back in early January. Because there was a point where I was like, I don't think I'm doing this. And then people like you were like, we count on you to do this. What do you mean you're not going to do this? And I said to you, I don't think anybody's going to be there. I mean, like last year, no one came, right? Like I had a couple of guests on from Zoom that were there and they're like, be glad you didn't come here. There's nobody here. It wasn't like that last week. I had a lot of smiles.
Oh man, you had them lined up. I mean, you had Warren Moon and all kinds of great guests. I want to ask you what was the attitude, Nestor, of folks that you spoke to out there about the ongoing controversy in the NFL regarding African-American coaches, because it had to be a topic of conversation. What did you bring away from that?
Well, that nothing's changed. And that's probably why I'm going to the owners' meetings in a couple of weeks, to go down there and sniff around a little bit, which I've done for almost 15 years now. I've gone to the NFL owners' meetings. They didn't really have them last year. One year they were sort of truncated because of the pending strike. If you remember that, there was going to be a lockout.
Sure.
And they moved it to like downtown New Orleans and did it down and dirty and in and out. And I didn't go that year. And I think my wife was also ill around that time. So like it was just a whole bunch of things going on. But I tend to go. And when I go, Dick Cass is there and Ozzy was there. Eric was always there as the assistant. And John's always there. And this is where I've developed this relationship with Mike Tomlin and you know, other coaches around the league that you wouldn't know. That, like, I know Bruce Arians a little bit because of these meetings, and Dirk Cutter, and when I would be there when Jack Del Rio was a coach, and Jim Schwartz and Rex Ryan. Those were more my colleagues. This is going to be a newer experience with a whole bunch of new coaches there. But the vibe that I always got, and I ate at that breakfast every year, right? So I was at the breakfast when John Gruden was coaching the Tampa Bay Bucks, and you would do an AFC and an NFC. You'd see coaches mingling. But I do remember back when Tomlin and Morris got the job in Tampa, there was a group of young gun black coaches that came along at that time. Lovie Smith was maybe more on the backside of that, and he's got a job again, right? But that topic, when you sit with Warren Moon and talk about him growing up 10 minutes away over in Crenshaw as a black quarterback who had to go to Canada, and when you sit and talk to Solomon Wilcots in Cincinnati, you know, when you talk to African-American grown men, not 22-year, not Odell Beckham. I'm talking about people that are post 40, that have experienced life and have been put in a situation where they didn't get a gig because of the color of their skin, or weren't considered, or and everyone who's of color in this country who's 40 plus has been discriminated against in some way, in some environment, had some bad experience somewhere where somebody dropped an N-bomb on them, you know, or whatever it would be, to really take this seriously, and that the Rooney Rule's not working, and like everything you would think it is. It's out in the open, man. Right after Trump, I'll tell you this, Band-Aids ripped off on race. People have no problem talking race anymore. Really, they don't.
Well, I thought it was interesting, and I'm going to ask you to talk, because you posted something the other day, which I thought was really neat. You went back.
I wasn't making you mad this time. I make you mad a lot on social media. That's okay.
You make me mad, but this time you
good. That's why they listen.
You actually made me smile, because you went back and watched a number of the past halftime shows, and I'm going to ask you what your takeaway from that was. And I was trying to remember many of them as when you said that. But I thought the absolute, if you don't think race is an issue, and again, for those who are listening, if you did not hear our recent interview with our friend John Feinstein of the Washington Post regarding his new book, Raise a Fist, Take a Knee, please listen to the interview. Please go out and buy his book. It came out in November, so it's only a few months old, and yet it's more relevant than it even was in November. It's amazing. I teased John. I said, well, you already have to write an epilogue. So it's pretty remarkable. But I thought the whole race issue, as you said, the scab being ripped off, was evident again in the reaction to the halftime show this year. Now, I was in a room with a bunch of teenagers and my son and son-in-law, 40-year-olds, and they all loved it. I mean, it was
clear. I was with an upper 20s couple from Canada, Brad Gagnon, who is a guest of mine from Bleacher Report, covers the NFL up in Toronto. And he brought his wife, and I had never met his wife. I see her on the internet. She's beautiful. They have a family. They live in Toronto. He's a buddy, sort of, kind of. We try to get a beer when we can. And we made a deal in the beginning of the game. I saw him on social media. I said, halftime, we'll watch the halftime show together. He's like, oh, my wife loves Eminem. And I'm like, cool, I'll come down, And they were right at the front of the section. He bought me a big foot soaker beer for $20, American, not Canadian. And so I witnessed it in the bowl of the stadium. And Don, I'll just say it's underwhelming in that way. It's not as good in the stadium. I mean, I'm just being really candid.
I'm guessing that's true.
It's not loud. It's made for television. It's very tiny from wherever you are. The only one that was different for me was Springsteen. When Springsteen played, I knew the direction he was playing. I left the press area and walked down into those seats. I hijacked the third row at the 50-yard line to see Springsteen. And you still were kind of still far away. You know what I mean? Like, it's a football field.
It's a made-for-TV production. You can see that.
Well, this is where I would bring you into this, because this is something fun for you that your son hates, right? Who sold my house. By the way, Jeff Moeller sent my wife and I this beautiful blanket that this is on our love sack that sits in the studio here. And this is what we got underneath and sat and watched on the love sack all of the Super Bowl halftime shows. So shout out to Jeff Moeller, who hates Broadway, right? Famously. I'll tell you this.
I failed him. I told you. I failed him on that front. He doesn't like Broadway musicals. I don't know what's wrong with
that. That's all right. Well, I mean, it's not for everybody. I don't like country music, So like when they do a country one, I'm the old white guy yelling, turn down that Sugar Land and that Garth Brooks. Although I think Garth should do it. I think Taylor Swift should do it. We started thinking about who should do it, right? So, and who's done it several times?
Garth's live show is as close to Bruce as anything I've seen. Now, I'm a Garth fan, but people who have not seen
the pooch on that. That night he played in the snow, and I live four blocks away, and tickets were $10, and he played at 2 a.m. Completely regret would be the word for that. We just didn't have the energy that night.
He literally runs like an athlete for 2 hours and 45 minutes. It's as close to a Bruce experience as you can have.
I saw Garth do a private show for 20 minutes for me and 20 people on the Today Show, Good Morning America. I get that straight. ABC. My friend is on the set. She got us in, and it was electric. It was amazing.
It's unbelievable.
It was amazing. He's 10. I mean, literally, we were in the basement with him. It was It was just a little set, and there was nobody there. 150 people. There were 10 guests, and that was it. It was us and the gaffers and then the crowd out in Times Square. It was amazing. I mean, I have video and pictures and all that. But
so you had some friends in low places that day.
Absolutely, man. So I'll say this: having watched all of them in person, right? And there's three games that I did not attend. I did not go to the Jacksonville game. I came and watched it on TV. I did not go to the Detroit game. It snowed. I had a bad knee. and the Steelers were going to win the Super Bowl. So I left Detroit on that Friday and let my, there was a point, Don, you'll find this hard to believe, where I was magnanimous and I had,
it is hard to believe.
I had employees and I let them go to the game instead of me because
oh,
I put them in front of me.
Imagine
that I would actually do that.
It makes me feel all warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? So I missed the Jacksonville game, the Detroit game, and I missed the Phoenix game in the Petty played. I gave my ticket to my sister-in-law. She was a Patriots fan. We flew her in. She and my wife did a thing in Tucson and like they went to the game as together because it's the only game her sister. Well, her sister went to our Super Bowl. Her sister was in New Orleans when we won, but her sister came to Phoenix and I said, go to the game with your sister. You know, let Casey and Ray take the passes and go to the game. Like I'll sit. I sat in my hotel room and watch that. I was worn out. I had a bad week that week. I was worn out that week. So I missed Petty and I watched it on TV and in 2008, every other one I've been in the stadium and the ones where they are on the West Coast, it's daylight. So
right.
it's really weird with the lighting. I watched the Coldplay one again from San Francisco and my wife was not with me. That my wife had just survived. She had almost died a few weeks earlier. I was a little weird to go, but I went and she was doing well. And that Coldplay one was better than you think. Like the Coldplay was really good on TV. I think they're all so good, but they're Broadway productions, you know.
They are terrific. What are there? Are there two or three? Now I love this because they're all fresh in your mind because you just watched them again.
I watched a dozen of them the other night.
Right.
My wife and I looked up, it was 11 o'clock at night. And we were like, but we didn't watch any of the old ones. You know, that's what I'm telling you. Like
I watched
Petty in 2009 and every other one we watched was modern.
So not the
Who, not U2, not McCartney.
Right.
We didn't watch any of those. So
of the dozen that you watched the other evening, what two or three, when you look back, say, man, that was pretty spectacular?
There were a couple we didn't watch. We didn't watch Bruno Mars in New York, and my wife loves Bruno Mars. Like, and we were sitting low.
I thought he was terrific, by the way, on the halftime show.
Yeah, this is the thing I forgot. Okay. So this is my takeaway. My takeaway was that they are the one from Super Bowl 50, which was the San Francisco Super Bowl, brought back Beyonce, Bruno Mars, and some, I get them all confused and I could Google it. That one, they it was also in the,
it wasn't Timberlake, was it?
Whichever one was the throwback one, they were showing all of the Super Bowl halftimes. It was an homage. I think it was 50 because it was Coldplay at the end where they sang a little U2 and they did a little Michael Jackson and they threw it around in that way to throw back. And what I would take away is they used to be rock concerts because that's what it called for. U2, The Who, Tom Petty. Tom Petty just had a heart and an arrow and Bruce. It was just a Bruce show. You know what I mean? These are different now. They're Broadway productions and they're made for cameras and they're made with, I mean, hell, that Weekend went into a fun now. I didn't watch that one. I don't like the Weekend. So he could do whatever. It's just not my music. You know what I mean? This rap thing, not my music at all. I mean, it's not what I listened to in the car. I knew most of the words to most of the songs. I guess I got to get down with the Kendrick Lamar guy. But the crowd was electrified by it. Everyone around me was electrified by it. Everyone, and maybe this is the company I keep and that I've lost along the way, I didn't have anybody complaining. I mean, a couple of the usual suspects complaining about it. Leonard Raskin didn't like it. He didn't like rap music. Right? So, like, I get it, right? But it was as good as it gets, I think, to your point, and hard to top. And I don't think they're ever going back to rock concerts. You know what I mean? Like, for all of us to say, put Bon Jovi up or whatever. No. It's a singing, dancing thing that appeals to young people, black people, white people, and Broadway people, and television. It's a made, yeah. It is a, and you know, one thing we watched, and I'll tell you this, because when you pull it up on YouTube, Taylor Swift popped up doing 20 minutes at the 2019 American Music Awards. And I'm like, I love Taylor Swift. I do. And I clicked it and she came on. And Don, it was on a stage. It was in an arena, I think. But it was a Super Bowl show.
That's where she had the banjo. She had the banjo going.
She did five songs.
I remember.
And Shake It Off. She had dancers. She had it all going on. And it was like, it was a Super Bowl show. And I said, this is when I turned to Jen. This is my takeaway. My takeaway is it needs to be singing, dancing, multiple in Latin, black, white. I don't think they're ever just going to put Garth out there and make it a rock concert. You know, I think if Garth is part of a rock concert that includes some dancing and some singing. And so I don't know how they do that, because this is literally, you're doing a Grammys thing. It's gone from, can we hire the Stones or Michael Jackson to bring a stop on their tour here and promote their album in 12 minutes to a Broadway production where I would think you'll see Hugh Jackman doing something and singing. And, you know, it might even be to that level where they'll bring actors in on it more. I think.
Well, I think you really touch on a number of themes there, really, really interesting themes. I equate it, Nestor, and then we'll jump on because I want to talk about the Olympics and some other things. I equate it, and I think I said this to you a few years back. When I look at the Macy's Day Parade, you know, we're big. That's part of our Thanksgiving shtick. We get set to go. We run some errands in the morning. We record the parade so we don't have to watch all the commercials. And then we begin. And I can remember saying to Linda, three or four years ago, I said, you know, this parade really is, for me, makes me very optimistic. And it shows why those who want to continue to try to divide us are eventually going to lose. And that's because, and you watch every single marching band, even now the Rockettes, there is an increasing diversity all day long in that parade. And I said, that's America. And to me, when I woke up the morning after the Super Bowl and I see that my son has posted on social media something to the effect of, I bet I'm not the only 40-year-old today with the radio cranked up. And I thought, this show really spoke, you know, to Jeff and Brian and other 40-somethings in a way that it didn't to old guys like me. And again, while that is not my genre of preference, it's like you said, it's not the music that I immediately come in the house. I did appreciate it. I appreciated the art form. I appreciated the energy. And what I really appreciated was the reaction of the people that I was watching it with. So I'd say to
Dr. Dre, have you ever seen the documentary with Dr. Dre?
Oh, it's fabulous.
Yeah, it's really, fabulous. Really good.
The guy
really,
makes
really
bazillions of dollars and almost blows the deal at the last minute because he can't keep his mouth shut. And also almost blows the whole deal with Beats. Yeah, it's a fabulous documentary.
By the way, I want to throw a thing in for Snoop on this, because Snoop's been involved in this Wounded Warriors game for many years, football game, flag football game. And he's shown up at two of like the five, but he's lent his name to it, his children, his foundation. All of his people were out on the field that night. They didn't know if he was going to make it or not. It was the night of the rehearsals for the what they put on Sunday. Right. And so he didn't make it out that day. And I've met Snoop. He's been on Radio Row, you know, at various points, but you know, him and Trey in LA, it was, and I use this word all the time. So my wife says I use the word too much. I thought it was appropriate. You know, it was just very appropriate. And they're going to come back to LA every 4 or 5 years. You ask about takeaways. My takeaway is that stadium is everything they spent the money on. And, you know, and I told the story the other day. I said, the media, you know, is basically shat upon, you know what I mean? Like, having done this for 28 years, there's barely shuttles anymore for the media. There's no more media caravan going to the stadium and they drop you off inside or, you know, get you there. We got dropped off like right in Inglewood. The first thing I smelled when the bus doors opened was marijuana. The first thing I saw was a guy sitting under an umbrella rolling joints and selling them, like, on the corner. That's what I saw when I got off and literally,
welcome,
and there was a Jamaican
welcome to
place
the
selling,
West Coast.
Hey, welcome to the Wild Wild West. So, I and then You walk into the gate and there's shrimp the size of your head, and there's rolling water, and there's a, you know, fake lake, and the stadium's built below the surface because it doesn't really rise up. And part of that is every plane is flying into LAX 2 miles away. So it's an unbelievable stadium. Like, I mean, and I don't say that, dude. You know me. You and I go back and forth about what is PR and what I say. You don't have to go see the Vegas stadium. It's a big stadium. Dallas, overwrought, overdone, you know. But if you've been to those stadiums and then go to this one, you'll like this one better.
Well, it shows.
Minnesota's really nice and different and urban and just cool. Atlanta, yeah, you know, I mean, it's okay. It's big. It's beautiful. It's probably better than Vegas and probably better than, certainly better than Arizona and some of these. But the Dallas thing's a monstrosity 10 years into me. This place is a place like Linda would be there with you for whatever you're there for. And you'd be like, I'm really in a nice place.
Oh, it's
this
beautiful.
Is a nice, it's nice. Even on a 90
really,
day, it's nice.
Really, really shows well on TV. Speaking of TV, obviously the Olympics have had a real issue and been a problem for NBC in terms of viewership. My guess is that networks are going to have to rethink how they cover Olympics in the future. Big picture question. Now, you were out of town. You were working, so kind of hard for you. Are you and Jen Olympic people or not Olympic people in terms of watching?
She is. I'm not. Historically. We cut the cord on cable a couple of weeks ago, so our lives have changed a little bit.
I cannot wait.
Well, we moved and we're trying to figure out whether we need it, want it, love it, have it, where we would watch it. We're a little displaced at the moment, just personally. And she's going away for a couple of weeks with her sister to climb mountains and have a good time. And, right now I won't watch television the next 2.5 weeks. I mean, I'll watch the internet, but I'm not going to watch television. You know,
one of my cousins just did it. They were in town for a funeral. We buried my aunt of 93 years, had a wonderful celebration, but they were in town and they just cut the cord and they went straight Amazon Fire Sticks with YouTube TV. They say they are over the moon, happy with it. They get all of the local stations, pick whatever from a menu that they like. They've saved, I want to say without exaggerating, I think they've saved 100 hours a month or so. They are thrilled with it. That would be a leap for me because I love the convenience of what I'm used to, but I am.
I mean, you still want a newspaper. You know.
No, like, I don't. I know. I read it on the. No, no. Come on now.
When did you get rid of the newspaper?
I it was hard for me to give up the paper in my hand, but I did it. But back to the Olympics, I find it's the human drama that works for me. And obviously, Nestor, I have to start. We have not green-roomed this at all. I am beside myself, like so many of the commentators, that this Kamila Valieva, the Russian figure skater, that you can test positive for doping and continue to compete. This is one of those ones.
We're in a country where you can stage an insurrection and still hang out down in Florida. So, like, breaking the rules and getting away with it. Oh my God! I mean, it's gross. But
the same Olympic committee that banned a U.S. track athlete for having tested positive for marijuana—that's not, in any way an enhanced and performance enhancing drug by any measure, that rules are either rules or they're not. And certainly the commentators have been outraged. I don't for the life of me understand why the Olympics want to go down this road. Now, my guess is, but it's going to be too little too late, right? My guess is when the final decision comes out, she's going to be banned from this Olympics. The Americans will get the gold, but by that time, it was too little too late. I mean, what the Olympic Committee said, in the meantime, while they're not having a ceremony, so the Americans can't even receive their silver medals, we're going to give them a couple of torches as mementos. I mean, it really is. And, I try to give people in leadership benefit of the doubt. But it's almost like, let's put a bunch of dummies in a room and see what decision. I mean, bottom line is, you doped or you didn't. This seems to be such a black and white issue that I found it really, really sad. And then the other thing in the Olympics, and I don't know about you, you're a dad, and we all look after our kids and we worry about our kids. The Michaela Schifrin story, to me, it comes on the heels of the Simone Biles story from the Summer Olympics. And my heart just aches for that young lady every time she fails to complete another event, you know. And evidently it's the first, you know, the first Olympics. Everybody by now knows the story. First Olympics without her dad. And she's giving it everything she has. And it just speaks volumes to me of how much pressure there is in the Olympics. And we have to really appreciate that. And then my final take is one, and again, it's not a sport that I followed closely, but man, if you're any kind, if you got a pulse or a heartbeat, right, the Shaun White story at 35, having transformed a sport, and when he comes down on his final run and he falls, and all of the snowboarders line up to pay tribute to him. If that doesn't get your pulse rating, then you need to get to see a doctor. And I thought his answer, Nestor, somebody said to him, what's your legacy? When you look back, what's your legacy? And I thought, what a great answer the young man had. He said, my legacy is the fact that these young guys just knocked me off the hill. That when I began, I hoped the sport would become so popular that there would be lots and lots of folks ready to take me down. And that's what happened. And I tipped my hat to them. And I thought, boy, oh boy, what great lessons of life to me. That's
I'm going to use that for sports radio now when everybody talks to me about the fan. I'll say, yeah, you know, like that, you know, I built it so they could go over there and try to figure it out.
It's your legacy. It went there to take out the king. Exactly right. So listen, we've had great discussions as we wind down another recon.
Nestor, your thoughts on Simone Biles. I want to jump in here because I haven't had my two cents on this.
Okay.
Why we're not watching the Olympics, why I was watching Super Bowl halftime videos the other night. Sports doesn't do it for me in the way it still does it for you. We talk about this all the time. And you hate when it's your brand. No, it used to be my brand in the way that the Olympics used to be NBC's brand. And things change. And for me, the ethics, the integrity, whether you could bet on it or not, and I sit here and promote sports wagering and it's there, it's the front. My other takeaway of being at the Super Bowl, bad. The minute you walk into Radio Row, everything that used to be against the rules is now $1 million set with a screaming former punter in a wife beater, drinking whiskey and yelling and dropping F-bombs loud as you could hear it in the like literally. And all of it funded by gambling, right?
Yeah, so, you know my feelings on that. But what about Simone Biles? First of all, you said, I don't like sports the way you do. I mean, I think you and I have been down this so many times, people are sick of hearing us talk about it. To me, sports is entertainment and human stories. For me, it's escape
and
from
sometimes
work.
Those human stories involve little girls getting raped on the gymnastics team and nobody wanting to talk about it for years and years. And
well,
then they
I don't
talk
know.
About
I
it.
I don't know
and
that then, nobody's not talking about it. I think
they're talking about it now.
Pretty,
they didn't talk
pretty
about
major
it
scandal.
Yeah, right. And
it's
that's
a major
right. I think that
scandal.
That has taken people away from all of it, that the Olympics are so corrupt where they go into these desolate communities, take money, treat these leaders like kings. The World Cup and the raid in Switzerland a couple of years ago on all the garbage that's gone on there, how they're playing soccer games in Qatar next year. So it's really where crime and corruption have leaked their way into doping in the Russian committee because there's so much money at stake, whatever the Chinese are doing to their athletes. And I was over there in 2007 promoting their Olympics. I flew across the world with Cal Ripken on a State Department trip to promote the Olympics in 2007 and baseball as a demonstration sport. And when we got over there, The Chinese put a lid on everything, put us where they want the journalists to go. I went to the gates in the Hotongs. I had some delicious little dumplings there on the streets, and I rode in the rickshaw. And you can see the gates of where they have all the kids. Where they breed Olympic champions for the good of Mother China and the People's Republic and all that. So I see what these other, what the creeps were doing was it Iran? Yeah, it was Iran or Iraq, where the Kude and Usay were, killing their soccer players. There are some really dark sides to international sports competition and where the money goes and the athletes not making any money, all of that. So for the Olympics, for me, I just feel like it's, the stories are nice and these kids work hard. And I think behind it's just really dirty-ish. Yeah. I can't get away from that. I can't.
You have to continue to be vigilant about that. And
in the same way, Bob Costas can't get away from CTE in the NFL. You know what I mean? But it's something that needs to be discussed. And the same way we began this with race in the NFL, it needs to be discussed. The corruption in the Olympics that make legitimate cities say, we're not doing that. We're not going to be a part of this.
There's a terrific, right? Since you've cut the cord and you're going to have a little time in the next few weeks with Jen out of town, jump on Peacock and watch a 4-part mini documentary. It's about 35 or 40 minutes an episode. It's called Meddling, MEDDLING.
Google it right now, Don. I'm on it.
You will love it. It is, and I cannot believe, Linda and I could not believe we did not recall this. It's a 2002 scandal in ice skating in the Olympics where the Russian mafia collude with the French to make sure that the Russians win ice dancing.
I remember this story.
The figure skating.
That beautiful Canadian couple, right?
Yes, the Canadian couple.
I remember
gets,
this.
Gets robbed. Everybody in the arena, including the announcers.
We were talking to Tom McMillan a month ago.
Right. So it's that, and it is everything that you said. It was a spell. We thought we would just check it out because we had seen the ad, and we couldn't turn it off. So it's absolutely gripping. Russian mafia, French judges making deals.
Only a true story, too.
Justin Crazy. So that's the recon. We've got a lot more next week and great guests all week long on Baltimore Positive.
Just for the record, I love sports when it's on the level and when it's fair. One of my problems with college basketball and college football, it's just not a fair fight in most cases. I like a level playing field. And I think that's one of the things the NFL has gotten absolutely right is trying to keep the chances of the Buffalo Bills and the Cleveland Browns and even the Cincinnati Bengals can make a Super Bowl. So there was a little lesson there. Don Mahler, we've done the recon here. You can find us out in Baltimore Positive. We've had an unbelievable week. Luke Broadwater joining us from the New York Times talking insurrection, as well as Donna Edwards, former congresswoman, trying to be a congresswoman again, and my crab cake partner. Bob, I didn't even say this to Donna, Don, but if she wins, I get to go down to Congress and have a crab cake there. Because
there you go.
I've been told they're the best crab cakes by several people. So
there you
including
go.
Tom McMillan. So I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. I have to come up with some catchphrase here about like telling you the truth and making you angry sometimes and causing you to tweet at me. But probably that's why they listen. We are Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.